So today we're going to discuss what we call here on the syllabus unfair and ruinous competition. The big picture question is, when is competition considered to be wrongful or bad or usur according to Jewish law? Now, many of us have this intuition that generally markets should be left unregulated. There's an intuition about laissez-faire markets, that markets run best without any intervention. Adam Smith spoke about the invisible hands, that if everyone's motivated by their own self-interest, then you'll get like efficient markets because everyone does the best to advance their product or their good. And then, you know, when everyone tries to do that together or independently, the market will kind of sort out the best things. And then it has this self-correcting mechanism of efficiency.
Did he take into account, like, capitalism and stuff like that?
He's widely seen as, like, an early... he's one of the early advocates of this kind of free market system. I just want to point out for today that, you know, that picture is obviously false. Like, markets are super regulated. And they're regulated in order to be free. Cool. So, you know, the Securities and Exchange Commission, which, you know, makes sure that people aren't, you know, running Ponzi schemes, right? You make sure there isn't too much inside trading. There isn't too much, there aren't too many monopolies. The thought is that those types of things would be bad for free markets, right? If Google could merge together with all the big tech companies and then charge whatever they want because there's no competitor, markets wouldn't be free at that point. So you need antitrust regulation to make sure that markets remain open and competitive. So that itself is like a type of regulation for us to have the conditions of free markets. Just an example of regulation.
So when you say free markets, you're not necessarily referring to, like, regulated or not regulated.
Yeah, I think there's an intuition that when we talk about free markets, which many people think are very good, it means no regulations, like libertarian free markets.
Right.
And so that they think there's a presumption against any type of regulation. That's like an intuition that people have. I think, of course, there's got to be regulation. Like, even in the United States, it's like pretty much a free market economy. But if there's much regulation to make sure that those markets remain free in the right way. The real question is, what type of regulation is good and what type of regulation is not good? What type of regulation is permissible or impermissible? That's really the question. Now, the reason why I give that introduction is because we're going to talk about Hasagas Gvul, or what's called Yorid L'Toch Umanuso Shel Chavero, which is about where the limits of permissible competition in halacha. And we'll see that halacha has some measures regulating competition. It definitely has a notion that competition should be regulated to some extent. The question for us is, like, what type of regulation, and is that regulation good for markets? Is it bad for markets? That's what I want us to examine today. I think when most people read this sugya, they have the impression, and it's probably true, that Hasagas Gvul, in this colloquial sense, is not something that American law would regulate. So it's unique to the halacha's outlook that this type of competition is going to be problematic. Okay, so let's jump into the sugya to get our bearings in this concept of Hasagas Gvul. So we're going to start with the Gemara in Bava Basra, Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. And the Gemara teaches us the following. Amar Rav Huna, Hai Bar Mevoa De Uki Recha. V'asa bar mevoa chavre v'kamuki gabe. So you have a member of a block, a neighborhood. He sets up a business, a mill. So he's grinding wheat into flour. And then a member of a different neighborhood moves in and puts his own mill in this neighborhood. So the Gemara says, "Dina hu demake ilave." the person who is a local resident has the right to block the foreigner from setting up his business. You are blocking me, you are preventing me from making from earning a living. That's the Gemara.
Does it matter if I'll be making more? Let's say you'll be making a living.
On its face, the Gemara seems to say that you have the right to block him even if you're going to be making some sort of living. Although you're right, the language of the Gemara is pasaktele lechiusei, but the way that's understood by the Mefarshim, by the commentators, is that you have a right to restrict him in this case. We'll talk about the halakhic details in a second. But this Gemara is an example where a member of a community has the right to restrict somebody from competing with him economically. So to put it into our terms, let's say you got... Anybody here from Teaneck?
Okay. I live in Teaneck.
Okay, good.
Not originally from there.
Okay, so you live in Teaneck. Okay. So let's say you live in Teaneck and you have a store there. You have a pizza shop. And then I, who live in Philadelphia, I come and I want to open a pizza shop in Teaneck. The halacha here in Bava Basra seems very clear that you have a right to restrict me. You have a right to prevent me from opening up and competing with you. That's a classic example of just restricting competition. What I want to explore in today's class is what are the legitimate grounds for restricting competition? When do you have a right to stop the guy from competing with your business? And we'll look at three major principles. Principle number one is based off location. And by that we mean that there's a presumption that if you are a member of a given community, then you have the right to set up shop and benefit from that community over an outsider, over a member, over someone who is not a member of that community or that neighborhood. That's what the Gemara here teaches us in Bava Basra Chaval from the Maze, that if you set up shop in your mavoi, in your area, and somebody from a different mavoi comes to compete with you, you could restrict them. Okay? There's one exception that the Gemara brings to that case that we have here in Bava Basra Chaval from the Maze as well. The Gemara says, "Bar masa achriti matzi ma'akev." So, as I just explained, you could restrict the outsider. Masa is a place. Bar masa achriti. Ishayich b'charga dehacha lo matzi ma'akev. So the Gemara has this exception of the charga. Anybody know what that is? It's a charga. It's a tax. So the thought is, if this guy, let's say I come from Teaneck, but I am paying taxes for whatever reason, I come from Philadelphia, but I, for whatever reason, I'm paying taxes, then you have no right to restrict me.
Paying taxes to
Teaneck. To Teaneck. Now, taxes, I think, back in the times of the Gemara, wasn't like taxes today. I think taxes was a way of determining whether somebody is a member of a certain community. So you could be a member of a community not just by living there, but by sharing in the financial burden. So the thought is that, like, how do you determine whether I am allowed to compete in this neighborhood? Well, if I'm a tax-paying member of this society, then I'm allowed to compete here as well. Because I am like a resident for, you know, for some purposes. Okay. Another way of thinking about this idea, like why should it depend on paying taxes, is you might say that a person shouldn't be allowed to benefit from a community or from a market without participating in the burdens and the costs of that market, of that community. So if someone's like a tax-paying member of a given area, that gives them a certain right to benefit from the market created by it. But it doesn't give somebody who's an outsider to just be like a pirate or a mercenary to come in and profit from a neighborhood or a market if they're not helping to pay for the cost of, you know, putting down roads and building a fence or a wall to defend it, or water system. So the shayach l'charga, the condition of being allowed to benefit from a given market, is conditioned on
contribution,
financially contributing towards it. Okay. So you can see this is summarized by the Pisfei Choshen. Let's just get a volunteer to read this. Ben Yeracheres, summarizing this right to restrict base application. Ellie?
Ben Yeracheres, with Asua, Panos, Omanos.
So somebody from a different city that comes to open up a shop or a warehouse or like a, when artists open up like a
galleries?
Gallery. Or a workshop, something. So the person who's a member of this city has the right to restrict him. So you could stop him from competing as an outsider, but of course you can't stop him from moving to the neighborhood, becoming a member of the neighborhood, and then opening up a shop once he's there. Okay? So you can't block him from becoming a member.
What is the name of the shop?
Yeah, shop, store. And that comes from the Chuvos, that comes from the Tur, who quotes his father, the Rush, that a person always has the right to move wherever he wants, and once he lives there, then he could compete. So even if somebody's moving there just to compete, you can't stop them. But what you could stop is somebody who is not yet a member of the community. And all that's paskened in the Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishatzim and Kufnun Bav.
Is it enough to just own property there?
Arguably, this, remember the standard in the Gemara is this idea of Shayach Lecharga. Like, are you participating in the taxes? So I think, yeah, it might be enough to just own property so long as you're participating in the financial burden. That's the standard. Now let me mention Fun Tshuva, that captures this idea of determining whether competition is permissible based off location, but also sheds light on how do we district, you know, how, like the gerrymandering question, like where do you, what's considered a neighborhood?
It's like the,
where does the neighborhood begin and end? So it's, it might be a subjective call in some cases, and there might be no one right answer. Like it's not like New York City or Teaneck versus Bergenfield. Like maybe it's like Kehila versus Kehila.
Well, that would make more sense, no? In our context.
So let's see. So here's an interesting tshuva of the Chalkas Yaakov, or Yaakov Breisch, posek in Switzerland in the last century. And he was asked about the following case. Just for fun, I'm going to, well, let's interpret the facts as if they're about YU. It works out nicely. So, v'zeh lashon hashela. Reuben v'Shimon kanu mis'ada le'yeshiva v'ishkiu b'mamon v'akol asmach shebnei ha'yeshiva yiknu etzlan. So, Reuben and Shimon, they are two restaurateurs. They want to open a restaurant, and they open up relying on the fact that the yeshiva guys are going to buy from them. So, I'll give the example. I'll say this is Golan. Golan's market is really the YU student population. Uve emes, and in truth, rov hatamidim v'harabanim v'haramim hivtichu lahem az liknos. And most of the rebbeim promised that they would buy. So this is like, let's say, UTS were to cut a deal with Golan that they'll sponsor the Hanukkah parties by buying Golan food. So like the institution kind of pledged that it would support the restaurant. And this worked out well for 3 years. The restaurant flourished, the student body purchased from them, everyone's happy. But then, of course, Ka'es Amad Talmid Echad Mibnei HaYeshiva Shemachar Arata Bein Kos LeHaYeshiva Rak Te Im Davshanim. So this is an entrepreneur in the yeshiva who decides that now he's going to start selling food, sandwiches. This guy was always a hustler. You know, apparently he was always selling some tea or something like that. But now he is opening a luncheonette. He's going to start selling tuna sandwiches. You know, maybe he's got a little sushi bar. Now the people open the restaurant claim. They bring him to a din Torah. Hashut ben tovenos lo din Torah. Ba'asher shemasig vulam. Masogas vul is a colloquial term used for encroaching upon someone's territory. Umafsik lichiyusam legamri. He's destroying their profits. Because without the student body buying from the restaurant really has no clients. Now, the yeshiva is kind of neutral on the matter. They're happy to do whatever the Din Torah, decides. And the Shutfin further say, HaShutfin Tohanim ki im haya minnegdam were the students to open up a luncheonette outside of the yeshiva, they wouldn't have objected. Because then it's like fair competition. This, you know, anybody who wants to buy lunch has to walk across the street. So like this, imagine like the Sim student who's starting this luncheonette. Like he does it in Nagel's Bagels. So like all the lazy students don't even have to leave Gluck or the library. I often buy lunch from Nagel's just because it's more convenient. So I don't have to walk all the way down to Golan or up to two blocks. So here they're complaining. They're saying, look, it's not fair. These yeshiva guys are putting us out of business because they're selling food within the yeshiva building. And that gives them an unfair advantage. Okay. So that's their claim. Now, Reb Reish has his interesting analysis, and he basically answers it by saying, look, we saw that the halacha in determining competition gives the preference to somebody who's the member of the neighborhood over somebody who's not a member of the neighborhood. That's the halacha we just saw. Okay? And so he says that seems to suggest that this idea of a mavoi, what's a mavoi? Mavoi is really an alleyway, but an alleyway is also a neighborhood. Like if you go to these European communities, these old medieval communities, like your neighbors, everything's like a narrow road, and your neighbors are the people who live off that one narrow mavoi. So he says, you see that the halacha gives a preference to the neighborhood, and so he says, therefore, Im kein hachanami benidon didan aim shura sadin shaachirim hadarim michutz hayeshiva yakvu al hadarim besoch hayeshiva lasos mashe bertonam yitziva v'ara v'giyura b'shmei shmaya. What's he saying? It's not appropriate that somebody outside the yeshiva should have a right over somebody who's inside the yeshiva, because they're basically like two separate communities, and we always assign the better right to the person who's a member of the community. So the thought here is that the yeshiva guy who is purchasing, who set up shop inside the yeshiva, and he's a member of the yeshiva community, if anything, he has a stronger right to compete in that market than the Reuben and Shimon who set up the restaurant across the street.
I thought it was the other way around, because Reuben and Shimon was inside the yeshiva.
No, Reuben and Shimon are the restaurateurs, who they're the Golan guys.
They're the ones who opened up in the first place?
Or? Yeah, they're the ones who opened up in the first place.
Not the new guy.
Right, the new guy, they're saying the new guy is a member of the yeshiva. He's like, he lives in the dorms, he's part of the student body. So he has prior access legally, he has a greater entitlement to the yeshiva student body than the two guys who opened up the restaurant across the street. But notice, this is a decision saying that we're not going to restrict competition. But they're saying, look at the logic. The logic of the right to compete in halacha, at least in part, depends on, are you a participant and a member of a given market? If so, you have a prior right to it. And the claim here is that even though these guys are just across the street, they're in the same neighborhood, since they're not members of the yeshiva itself, it sounds like they should not be given the right to shut down the business that's internal to the yeshiva. Pretty interesting yeshiva, right?
Yeah.
Years ago, I sat on a case of this jewelry business. where the owner of the jewelry business was suing his employee, who basically, this employee had worked for him. The owner moved to a different state to start a second store. So let's say the business was originally in California, and now the owner moves to New York. He wants to spread his footprint. So he has this guy working for him back in California, and the guy in California is making commissions on sales. But the guy making commissions realizes, why should I be just getting a percentage? Why don't I just open my own shop here? Why should I be working for the guy who's living in New York? So he breaks away and he starts his own shop in the same building, same place, etc. So the guy who moved to New York, the owner of the shop, sues him. He's like, how could you do that to me? You know, I taught you this malacha. I taught you this business. You can't open a shop in my area that's competing with me. So it's a very interesting case for a variety of reasons. But we ended up saying, actually, that the new guy, the employee, has a right to start his new shop and compete, partially because the owner of the business moved away. Like, he now is a resident of New York. He doesn't live in California anymore. So there's an argument that somebody who's an ongoing member of a community at least has a greater right to benefit from that community than somebody who's no longer a resident of the community. So that's similar to this tshuva of Rabbi Breisch over here.
According to that description, right, where it's about the contribution, meaning I understand, according to Rabbi Breisch, it seems to have more of a focus on where the person actually is living. But according to that statement, the paying taxes and the contributing to the community, you don't even necessarily need to be a resident.
You know? Right, you might say, oh, if you have a business here and the business is paying taxes, then he has a right to compete.
Right.
So we agree with that. Remember, our case is a case not where we're restricting competition. It's a case where we're denying a claim to restrict competition.
Right, so we're saying even in this case too.
Similar to this case, right?
Right.
So our point is actually just given that this employee who started his own business is actually a member of this community and he lives there, he sends his kids to school there, he goes to school there, he gets precedent, not to shut down the other guy. We're not saying that he could shut down his original employer. We're simply saying that it would be wrong halachically to shut him down.
Got it.
Given that the guy who's asking to shut him down doesn't even live here anymore.
Well, let's say he did live there.
So then it might hit. Then it would be a much stronger claim.
Okay.
Correct. Gilad?
I mean, I'm assuming the guy who broke off and used his and started his own company is maybe like using his inside like network and stealing his clientele. Does that also come
into? We're going to talk about that at the end of the class today. Yeah, that's going to be the third principle that I want to discuss. Like this idea of like interfering with establish business relationships.
It's probably true that he was doing that.
Of course.
Yeah.
How that's one of the issues in the case. We'll talk about that. Yeah.
Sam, yeah. Once you're within the town.
Shmuel or Sam?
Yeah, either one. Once you're within the town, would it matter being like right next to each other versus opposite ends of that? It's not relevant.
So, you know, it might depend. It really might depend case by case. In the tshuva of Reb Breisch, what's interesting is that they're in the same town. Just one's a member of the yeshiva community and one's not. And he thought that was enough to be halachically relevant.
With the jewelry store, could they at least tell the guy like, at least go to a different building within the community?
Maybe, yeah. Well, so we'll talk a little more about location. But, you know, maybe there's a... It's a difficult question to know how to divide up space in the relevant way for these shuvas. Yeah, Ellie.
Isn't this business idea just kind of stupid? Because, like, a pizza store, at least, like... Everyone like wants food and whatever. People eat food all the time, but with jewelry, like two jewelry stores. Like, let's say their business was doing like well, you know, like.
Well, he was really putting the first guy out of business. We'll talk about that case.
What?
He was going to put the first guy out of business.
I mean, he was going to put the first guy.
The employee who broke away.
Yeah.
His shop was going to put the first guy out of business.
Yeah, but who says so? Meaning, how does he know he's going to put him out of business?
I think because he knew he was the magic of the store. He was the salesman.
Okay, I'm saying the guy could just hire another salesman.
No, but he took the clients.
This guy's an idiot.
But this guy was he was running the shop. He was going to the shul dinners to figure out when everyone's anniversary is, to you know, tell them when to buy their wife a new bracelet and
right.
Right. We'll talk about that case in a minute. Yeah.
Karlaff mentioned to us last year that a case of a new bagel store in Grandma's.
Where?
The new bagel store here in Grandma's. Were you on that case also?
No.
Oh. Why was he like, do you know anything about it? Why wasn't?
They went to Bezdin in that case?
Karlaff said, I'm not seeking you guys because you guys did Tacoma.
Say it again?
Karlaff said that he told us in class that I'm not going to take your case because what they're doing to you is what Grandma's, you guys raised in Tacoma 20 years ago.
Oh, I think Grandma was suing this guy?
Yeah.
Even though they did it...
why did Como not care?
That's great. So we'll talk about the principal, yeah.
No, about this one right now.
Oh.
Like, why just Grandma? When did Grandma get to get to
Maybe Como really makes money off their deal with YU.
Yeah.
Like all those... all those kind of watches.
What?
I think YU, yeah. YU buys
it. It's only
OU plays
well,
pizza and
meat. Right, so, but they probably don't care about these other competitors.
Do you think Como wouldn't start if they didn't have the deal with YU?
Probably.
None of these restaurants.
I haven't audited their books, but maybe.
YU. No, Como has an advantage through the OU, and why you trust the OU.
YU keeps all those restaurants in business. Virgin Grill got out of business. Grandma's Como.
So let's look at the Shulchan Aruch. I want to discuss one other exception to this rule. An exception about when it's okay for somebody to compete from outside of the community. And you can see the Chazal, you know, the Rishonim and the Gemara, they have a pretty sophisticated sense of how markets work. So the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Kuf Nun Vav here writes, Yesh Omrim, Hadi B'nei Yir Yecholim Limchos B'nei Yir Acheres. When are you allowed to restrict somebody from a different city? Ariel, why don't you read? Hainu.
Hainu Daka.
Seda de Lekuchos. What is Seda de Lekuchos?
A loss from...
A loss to...
A loss to the taker.
What are Lekuchos? Buyer. Purchasers. Customers. So you're only allowed to restrict somebody from the outside if there's not going to be a loss to the customers.
Got it. To like his customer base.
I mean, well, let's see what that means. Shemokrin...
Kishar b'nei ha'ir v'gam skoyrasan ina teva yezer mishal b'nei ha'ir.
So what's the case where there's not going to be a loss to customers? Either, sorry, both, seems like both of these conditions have to obtain. Number one, the new business is selling at the same price point that the old businesses are selling at.
Or they're selling to the remainder.
Their merchandise is not any superior to the merchandise that's being sold here now. But if the merchandise is superior or they're selling at a better price, then you have no right to restrict them. Why? Because then there is pseida l'bnei ha'ir. You're harming all the members of the community. So think about it this way. When you think about competition, you can't just think about the one store against the other store. You can't just think about, let's say, Grandma's against the new bagel store. Do we know what it's called?
Bagel bar.
It's not just about one. It's not just about store versus store. You got to think about the population, the customer base that's going to suffer or benefit as a result of restricting or not restricting competition. So the moment the customer base is going to benefit in some meaningful way, then Grandma's does not have a right to restrict the new entrant. So you can see here the Shulchan Aruch continues, Aval imnosnin yoser bizol. If let's say this new place has cheaper prices, oshehi yoser tova, or its wares are better quality, sha'oz nehen in halokhen mehen. Go ahead.
In mechreas, chayres yuchom limchais.
Yeah. Then Grandma's and the other stores aren't allowed to object to the new entrant. Okay. Similarly, what's another a related exception that the Shulchan Aruch has?
Kishemivian schera acheres she'in l'nei ha'ir aval pi deloy muzle b'mekach ve'ena yezer teva.
So what does this mean if they bring Schora Cheresh in the Bnei Yer? What does that mean?
Other products that didn't exist, that weren't in the city yet.
They bring new merchandise. So let's say this new store has products that the other stores aren't selling. That is a reason to let them, to not restrict them, right? To let the store come in, establish itself. Because here too, there's Pleita de Lekuchos. The halacha is not going to favor grandmas. It's not going to favor the competing store, the established store, over the actual customers of the neighborhood. Right? You see how there's two considerations here? There's the shop owner who's being competed against, but there's also the community. Does the community itself stand to benefit or lose from the competition? And the Shulchan Aruch's claim here is that whenever there's a benefit, better prices, better product, whether superior product or distinction in product, that's a reason to allow competition.
To allow
somebody to come in, even if it's an outsider. So let's say I'm coming from Philadelphia and I'm setting up a pizza shop in Teaneck and I'm not paying taxes in Teaneck, so normally you could restrict me unless my pizza is better quality pizza, I'm providing a different type of pizza, it's a different type of schora. And again, it's a judgment call, what's a different type of schora, or my prices are better. Right, so better quality pizza, different types of pizza, or better prices, any of those would be a sufficient reason for allowing me to come in and compete, even though I'm from out of town. Javi?
Why does it matter if the prices are higher? Because then they're not competing. And if the customers end up going there anyway, that means they have something to offer.
It's a very, very good question. I think what Avi's saying is basically, look, if people are going to go, anytime somebody's willing to go to the store, that's basically showing that they think it's difference in quality, right? So basically, if people don't go to the store, then it'll die out anyway. And if people are going to the store, clearly it's adding something new. And that should satisfy the Shulchan Aruch of Nosam Yoser Bezol. So the way I think about this is I think about, you're taking a very laissez-faire view, which is, you know, let the customers decide. And then the invisible hand will determine whether this is better or worse. Imagine, though, the following case. Imagine the case that, suppose splitting the customer base. Suppose like Yesh V'Yesh, right? There are some customers maybe that would want to go to either store. Or they're indifferent. Lots of customers are just indifferent.
About paying more?
Well.
About paying more.
Yeah, for some people.
For lower quality?
Well.
About paying a higher price for a less quality?
Yeah, let's say some people just like variation. Okay. You know, so like.
Well, then they like variation and that's the benefit.
And that itself is a benefit. But you could imagine a case where that's still going to be destructive to the original business owner. Right, maybe he'll be put out of business, or maybe he's going to suffer.
Well, the same thing when you lower prices and you offer a different product or a superior product.
Right, so it seems to me the halacha here is trying to weigh the interests of the established store owner as against the interests of the
club,
the lekuchos,
right,
the community. And the halacha is saying, look, there's a presumption that we want to save the established store owner. Because he's from this community, he has a prior right to the competitor. But if there's like a significant benefit to the community that will be added by the competitor, then we're not going to protect the established store's rights. So it seems to me that you have to reach a threshold of significant benefit, whether better prices, better quality, or distinguished product, different type of product, in order to justify harming the established store's rights. Now, if it's like a tiny difference that, you know, hey, some people like variety or some people be willing, maybe that's not enough to justify allowing the competition or the harm to the established store.
Okay.
Right? So basically, it's a complicated way of saying, I think, that it can't be a minuscule benefit. Right, kind of the Bezdin has to determine that this is a substantial state of the lekuchos, loss to the customers, if they restrict this guy from competing. But I hear the logic of your argument is, what do you mean? If people are going there, then they think it's valuable. I think my response to that is, no, sometimes people go to stores, you know, because it's somewhat differentiable, it's microscopically better, something along those lines. And the halacha is saying you have to clear some sort of threshold to allow the competition. Yeah, but it's a very good question. Hurry up.
One thing I'm having a harder time with is the price. Meaning, I think the most direct form of competition would be to sell the same product in the same location, but to lower your price.
And that's
so
okay.
That's okay.
That's okay in the Shulchan Aruch.
You said, so where is it not okay? Because you just said the Shulchan Aruch. So. You said it's okay in the Shulchan Aruch.
Yeah.
Is there anywhere that you posken that that's not okay?
Lowering the price?
Yeah. No.
No, I'm saying the Shulchan Aruch posken that if the, let's say Como and Grandma's make exactly the same pizza.
Right.
But Grandma's sells at a lower price.
Right.
Then they'd be allowed to come in and compete.
Okay.
Because that's a benefit to the lekuchos. That's a benefit to the buyers. Right? The halacha is not going to protect the rights of Homo at the expense of the benefit of the community. The benefit to the community.
So, are we going to go through the cases that you assigned for reading?
Yeah, we're going to talk about them. Hopefully,
because I just in those cases I'm having a hard time seeing the.
Great.
How that works, but yeah, anyways.
Gilad.
So, I had a question before, I was kind of answering the obvious question, but what, like, for this case that happened on here with grandmas and whatever, it's hard, based on what you just said, it's hard for me to imagine a case where anybody would be, like, when would you be able to complain to another shop, unless he's out of town and doesn't pay taxes? Most of the times, he's people live, like, when would be cases where they live in town and you can not and restrict the business? I can't say.
You think it's very rare?
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Based on everything we're saying, it's like you're pretty much allowed to.
Yep. You'll see. You know, people think that, like, Judaism is like always like it's crazily the Hasagas Kavul, you could always shut somebody down for
company. Yeah, like I always hear people say like, oh, you can't open up.
Yeah.
I always heard people say that.
When you look at the halachos, you'll see it's actually very hard to win.
Yeah.
It's actually very hard to win an Hasagas Kavul claim.
Yeah.
Right. Well, let's see, we're gonna see a few more principles, but this one is based off location. You see it's very hard to win on the location argument, especially given that there's this exception for better product, cheaper prices, different product. Right.
That's a cool question.
Sure.
So you said before that in order to be able to open, you have to sell at the same or lower price or same or lower quality. Is that what it was?
To open, you have to be either providing better quality or better prices. If it's the same quality and same prices, you wouldn't be allowed to compete from the outside.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, let's now look at a second principle. So the first one is based off location. The second principle is based off Husek Lechiyusai. You'll see this is a chiddush that comes up in the Ashkenazi poskim. It's less clear from the Gemara itself. If you remember from the Gemara in Bava Basra, the Gemara talks about alleyways. It's a member of one town coming to compete with somebody from another town. If you look at this Mordechai, he has a chiddush in Bava Basra, Remez, Tav Kuf Tes Zayin. This is the famous Mavoi Sasum, the closed alleyway. And he says, even though the Gemara paskins that members of the same alleyway could compete against, members of the same community could compete against each other, there's an exception made for the following type of case, the Mavoi Sasum. You may want to take a stab at reading that. Javi?
Mavoi Sasum Megimel Tzadidin.
So an alleyway that's closed off on three sides, and it's only open on one side.
So,
There's only one way in and one way out, so let's do it this way. Go on, keep reading.
Rock v'tzad echad yechnusu yechanesu lo v'dor Reuven etzel sofo satum.
Okay, so Reuven lives near the closed off side. So where does Reuven live? He's here, right? Here's Reuven's house. And then what happens?
Uvo Shimon Bador Kenegid Hatzad HaPetuach.
So Shimon lives here. Shimon's house, Reuven's house. Shimon's at the open side of the alleyway. Okay.
She'in Ha'obi Tzalkabim Yochol Lekvalech
So the thought is that unless you have a non-Jewish random person, right? So they come by a random customer walks into the alleyway. So he normally, if he wanted to buy, I don't know, what's he got, buy pizza, he would have to walk down to Reuven's house. But then Shimon opens a shop over here at the entrance of the alleyway. And so the only way to get to Reuven is to pass by Shimon. See that? So what's the halacha? Nira.
Nira the yachol with achav alav kiddurav.
So in a case like this, Reuven could stop Shimon from opening a pizza shop here. The Rama doesn't explain what's special about this case. What do you think is special about this case?
It's a non-Jew.
Well, no, I think it's like their example of like, you know, a random person, like a random customer who doesn't really know the layout of the community. He's looking for pizza. He's looking to buy whatever, you know, meat, whatever he's buying, or wine. So there's really, it would be irrational for him to walk further to get the exact thing that he wants, right? So what's significant about this case? So you'll see that the Rama writes already in this famous Tshuva in Siman Yud. This tshuva is about copyrights. The Maran Padua, I don't know if anybody knows this case, the Maran Padua was publishing a version of the Rambam, and then there was a non-Jewish publisher who was also publishing the Rambam, and they got into like a Sagas Kabul fight. That's what this tshuva is about. It's a great book if anybody's interested in this question about copyright. By this guy, Neil Weinstock.
Who is he?
Copyright halakha. He's a law professor at West. I'll think to say about that in a second. So the Rama wants to know whether the Marami Padua has a right to restrict this other publisher from publishing Rambams because it's going to put him out of business. So you can imagine they're competing for a very niche market. Not how many people want to buy Rambams. It's very expensive to invest in publishing, especially back then. The printing press, it's not like today where you hit print on your printer, you have to actually have like the metal plates, right? Like the old Gemaras that are of terrible quality. So in order for it to be rational for you to publish something, you have to expect that you're going to make a certain return on your sales. Now, this non-Jewish publisher was also publishing Rambams, and so Maram Padua thought that the market's not big enough to sustain the two of them. And you can see here, for example, Ki Yadua Im Lo Yimkar, hold on a second. So he goes to the Sugya V'Asagas Gvul. He quotes the Mordechai that we just read. And he says, what's significant about the alleyway case? The following. Dividavar debari hezeka kigon hacha gabe mavoi shavada yaziklo kuli alma modu de hilchasa karabuna. Everybody will agree in a case like this block alleyway, that's vada yaziklo. It's not a very well defined term. How would you explain vada yaziklo?
For sure, gonna damage the established party.
Yeah. Like here, the point is, when it comes to a new store opening up, normally, you know, the market could do its thing, and, you know, it will calibrate. You know, maybe initially there'll be a little pressure on one store, but then the other store could like respond, like become a little more efficient. We don't know that the opening of a new store, we don't really know that it'll have a damaging effect. But in a case like this, where it's just so clear that anybody who coming in here to get this thing will, you know, you never go to the Shuk in Israel?
Yeah.
And like all like half those stores sell the exact same dry fruits.
It's about who yells the loudest.
But the thought is that, like, let's say it was like a dead end alleyway, and the store in the front sells the exact same dry fruits as the store in the back. There's no way the guy in the back is going to remain in business. So that's vada yazik, though. Like, if the conditions are such that this guy is for sure not going to survive, that's what the significance of this alleyway construction is. Then, even if they're from the same neighborhood, Reuven has a right to block Shimon. Sorry, of course, Reuven is the one that's not going to survive. The guy in the back. Now, let me just say one more thing. There's a chazanish that interprets this.
So with the publishers, we said that they can open? I mean, the non-Jewish guy who's printing the Rambam could do it?
So the Rambam says, based off this, that if the publisher is going to, for sure, if the market's not big enough to support both publishers, then based off this theory of the Mordechai, of the closed alleyway, then the Maharam Padua has a right to block the other publisher from publishing his Rambam. So the standard here is, like, do we know that it's going to be harmful to the guy who's there first? If we know that vadayazik lo, then we have a right to restrict competition. So Gilad, you can see this kind of resurrects the Hasagas Gvul, right? You have to figure out what's the standard for vadayazik lo. So for example, let's say this bagels place opens up and grandma's wants to sue. So you say grandma's like, oh, how do you know it's going to... Like, how do we know this will definitely be harmful to you?
It's more expensive also.
What?
It's also more expensive.
It's more expensive,
well,
right.
In this case, you said, who has Shimon has it? What is that?
Reuven has the right to stop Shimon.
Yeah.
Because no one in their right mind is going to go to Reuven's store when Shimon's right there at the entrance. That's the idea. So if we know that in a case like this, Shimon's for sure going to be harmed. That's the...
You mean Reuven's?
Sorry, Reuven's for sure going to be harmed. My bad. Yeah. Let me just say one more thing. The Chasam Sofer has a tshuva. We have it here on page 6. Chilak Hei Simen Ayin Tes.
Top of page 7. Verse.
Oh, say at different paginations. He quotes this Mordechai, which really goes to the Rav Yehuda. The Rav Yehuda is the Avi Asaf. And he says, what's significant about this case of the sealed alleyway is she'ein adam over l'hasheni kodem she'agia l'pisco shel rishon. Anybody who would try to get to Reuven's store would have to pass by Shimon's. Why is that significant? Because nimtza posek l'chiyuse l'gamri. What's going to happen in that case, this is the Chasam Sofer's analysis, is that you're going to destroy the guy's income altogether. Posek l'chiyuse l'gamri. As opposed to what he calls over here later on in the tshuva, the cases of the Gemara are cases merely of poches chiyusei velo posek legamri. What does that mean?
That you're going to lower his livelihood, but not completely take
exactly.
Away.
Posek legamri means you're going to destroy the guy's livelihood altogether, meaning his profits will go to zero.
And that's
versus poches, which just means okay, you're going to cut into his earnings.
Right.
So the way that Chasam Sofer understands this case is as follows: if the competition is simply going to lower the profits of the established business, then you have no right to restrict. You have no right to block competition. But if it's going to be poshek legamri, if it's going to knock the profits down to zero, then you do have a right to restrict the competition. Everybody see that?
But if it has just like a small effect on profits, then you don't have the right to...
Correct. So grandma's wanted to win in restricting the new entrant, grandmas would have to show that this would basically put them out of business.
And that's
not just that it would come at a cost to
and
them.
That's vadayazik.
That's how we understand this idea of vadayazik lo. It could be the Ramah himself has a different standard of vadayazik lo. The language of that could just mean like for sure there'll be harm as opposed to, we don't know. But the Chassam Sofer is giving it. The Chassam Sofer is going a little further and saying.
Right, but the Chassam Sofer is not even. He's telling us what Yazik lo means. He's not telling us what Vada
exactly.
means.
Exactly. Right. Yazik lo means that post Eglichi Yusei
Legamri. Right, but he doesn't tell us what Vada means.
Correct.
How would you determine the.
That's, but to Gilad's point, this does make it pretty hard to restrict competition, right? Because now the burden is on the established business to prove that this will destroy their profits.
Yeah.
Right? Ellie? Oh, sorry.
Two things. Regarding, so if you have a one-way street, that's the same rule as this?
I think the standard really is to see, like, what kind of traffic is there, and, you know, like, in the Rabbi Jackie article that we read, you know, there's some discussion that sometimes, you know, more businesses bring more people. Right? Right? So maybe some yuppie person in New York is going to go to their kosher restaurant list, and they're going to say, oh, bagel store in Washington Heights. And they're going to flock to Washington Heights. And then they'll see, oh, grandma's next door. Like, hey, you know, I'll bring some pizza home for my kids also.
That's what the shook really is about during the shook, you're saying.
Yeah,
there,
possibly.
There is in the shook. Like,
correct.
But it's
the idea is that, like, this, it's really a case-by-case assessment. And the significance of this construct of the Mordechai, the dead-end alleyway, you know, it's a way of trying to determine whether or not this is going to be poches lichiyusei or mafsik lichiyusei legamri. That's the legal standard. So people often say, hey, look, we got to look at two things. We have to look at, number one, location. Are you an outsider versus an insider? That's the first question to determine right to compete. And then number two, this question of, are you simply cutting into his profits or are you destroying his profits? And it would be a basis to restrict him if you're destroying his profits. Let me just say two things and I'll take more hands. There's another chew of the Chassam Sofer that I have here just for thought in Chilek Hei, Simen Kafir Ches of Choshe Mishpat, where interestingly he talks about somebody who has multiple businesses and then the competition is going to put one of his businesses out of business altogether. So let's say the owner of Grandma's has like a few restaurants in New York City, but now this bagels place is going to put Grandma's out of business.
Well, why?
So the Chassam Sofer says that we don't care that he happens to own other businesses, that he happens to be wealthy. What we're determining is like this store. Like, will this store be put out of business? So it's not like a Rachmanis for the guy's Parnasa or for his economic well-being. Well, yeah, it sounds like it's this store. Now, that makes us wonder, you know, when we think about these things, especially in light of the exception earlier for Seida de Lekuchos, like for the customers. Now, you might say that the halacha here is actually trying to regulate markets in a way that allows for competition. So remember, the standard is if a new store is going to put an old store out of business altogether, maybe that's like no good because then they'll have a monopoly. But the type of competition that we want is competition where multiples, like if a community can only sustain one store, kind of like where I live in Philly, sort of. And it's bad for there to be multiple stores because then everyone goes out of business and the community is left worse off, right? Or you're left with one store that's kind of price gouging.
But it is in Montreal. It's a monopoly.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's just a monopoly.
So they raise prices like crazy.
The price of meat is like ridiculous. It's like almost double what it is here. So,
really?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Nothing anybody could do is no one's paid.
Right. We gotta bring in a new butcher.
You won't be able to take a mafia.
Right, so they say.
You'll get a firebomb in 2 days.
Is that how it works?
No joke.
It's like a spray bullets in front of the yeshiva again.
Guys, that's the least of your issues.
Did they ever figure that out? Did they figure out what happened?
No one, the police doesn't really, like, do much. Not like here, like, our security, like, they're not done. They just have walkie talkies and phones. Not good.
It's like burn security.
That's pretty much it. Like, this year, you guys have, like, all, like, a rifle and stuff.
Right.
Good.
I hear. Ellie, then Moshe.
Yeah.
The case we spoke about earlier, we spoke about a case in the Indian class where a person being a part of the community
matters. Yeah.
Matters. So let's say two guys, one guy in the community had a store, but it was an e-store, it was online. But really, the majority of the customer base was from his community because that's where it's most widespread word of the store. Someone else in his community sees, oh, this is a good idea, does the same thing. And again, that's going to cut into his thing because most of the people who know about it live in that community as well. Does it make a difference that it's not a physical store and that most of the customer base is in one place?
Yeah, it's a difficult question. I don't know the answer off the top of my head. Anything else like shifting to online, like customer base is a little tricky.
Right, online, yeah, I'm just curious how it would work online.
Yeah, Rejector writes about that a little bit, so it's worth seeing what he thinks about the online retail business. But the idea of like online shops, like even for the tax code, it's very complicated. Like, which jurisdiction are they in for tax reasons? So it's equally complicated for, I'll start with school questions, right? Like, who are the lukukos that are affected here, right? Moshe, you have a hand.
Yes, so for the third one, it's for determining whether it's actually going to put them out of business or just going to make a dent in their profits. How would you go about calculating? Like, how do you put something?
So in the cases that I've sat on, usually they bring in their QuickBooks and they show you the profits and losses prior to the competing store moving in, compared to the profits and losses after the competing store moved in.
But what's the threshold? What's the threshold for
post-seglich yusli, right? So Ramosha, let's talk about Ramosha quickly, because Ramosha gives us a nice standard. It's a chiddush, but Ramosha has a nice way of explicating it. It says, Igros Moshe, Choshe Mishpat, Aleph Lamed Ches. Sure.
Like, I learned in, like, a bunch of business classes that, like, there's certain theories that, like, gas stations or certain companies, like, kind of are grouped together specifically.
Yeah.
Because
it attracts people.
There's going to be more attraction.
Yeah.
So, like, where there's, like, a smaller Jewish community, for a grocery store, maybe it makes sense that it would be taken away from both. But, like,
right,
for restaurants and certain things, like,
could be good.
Yeah, wouldn't it boost it?
Right. As I mentioned this before, right? I mentioned that maybe, like, that's my yuppie New Yorker example.
Yeah,
the yuppie New Yorker example is, like, maybe they'll see, oh, there's a bagel store up in Washington Heights. Let's go check it out. And then once they're here, they see, oh, there's grandma's here, too. I'll bring home pizza for my kids. So there's a theory that, like, you know, kind of like the American Mall. Like, the American Mall exists that people want to, you know, they're attracted for one thing, but that is a hook for them to go into something else. So I think all these cases have to be determined, like, on a case-by-case assessment to see if, in fact, it's destroying income or whether it could actually increase
income. But it also just creates opportunity for the community to expand and be grouped around, like, a certain, like...
That would fall under the Pseida Lulakuchos consideration,
right?
We're not going to restrict competition to protect the rights of the shopkeeper if it comes at a cost to the whole neighborhood. That's right.
Like, I'm thinking, TNAC, all the apartments are in here, like, Queen Anne area, where there's restaurants,
there's a social benefit to having all this infrastructure.
It's, like, super convenient for young couple. Like, I live near there, like, it's just super
easy. Sounds to me from, like, and you could see this, you could get this sense also, that this stuff is only really restricted when it's, like, a lose-lose, right? It's, like, a lose for the established businesses, and it's a lose for the community. Right. The only person we're harming is the new guy who wants to set up shop here, and we're basically saying go set up shop elsewhere. But if it's a lose for the established store owner, but a win for the community, it sounds like the halacha is not going
to
step in.
No, we don't care if it's necessarily going to take away business from another, not from a non-Jew. Like, that doesn't make a difference for us.
Mm-hmm. On its face, that's correct.
Right. It's like there could be, like a Staples or something nearby, and then someone opens.
It's an interesting question of what we would say the din is for a non-Jew who's suing under a Hasagas full claim against a Jew. It's an interesting question. Sometimes, like in Nezikin, the din is sometimes you apply the non-Jewish law, like you apply the more kal of, if a non-Jew is suing a Jew, you apply the more kal of either the non-Jewish law or the Jewish law. It's interesting.
Wow. If a non-Jew sued, like,
just this Jewish law.
Right, well, yeah, maybe they want to come to Bezin because there's no Asaka school and secular law.
I'm saying, this idea of undercurrent competition, whatever, it applies to non-Jews also.
Well, that was the question, right?
Yeah.
But it applies to a Jew.
Jack was asking, does it apply to non-Jews?
Oh, pretty much that's what you're asking.
Right. The tshuva of the Rama is about a case of a Jew suing a non-Jew.
You can look at it from a perspective of the Jew who's moving into the area where there's already a non-Jewish business established. Right now, the Jew is taking away the business.
I'm
not saying that like a non-Jew would move into.
No, I'm saying in that case, you said the non-Jew wants to sue, right?
Yeah.
So I'm saying, is that allowed?
I think it's the same question.
Right, the tshuva of the Rambam that we mentioned earlier with the publishing of the Rambam. So that was the Maran Padua suing this non-Jewish publisher, Rav Sagas Gevul. And what the Rambam, part of what he discusses there is when non-Jews have a mitzvah of dinim, of setting up a legal system, so how much of the Jewish kosher mishpat system are they supposed to have? That's part of what he discusses in that tshuva. So, like, do we assume that they are bound by the same laws that we have, and then equivalently would have the same rights, free competition or restricting competition that we have? This tshuva of Moshe on Chelek Aleph Siman Lamaches is quite interesting. It's a case of a breakaway shul, famous shul of Moshe. V'dvar anashim shehochel mi beis haknesses shel Rebbe Yechad. Now the Shaila Tafshin Yuches, the Shaila that Moshe was asked about is look at that. Ches da'aseres me'tshuva Tafshin Yuches. It was like right before Yom Kippur. I guess it's like an emergency injunction. Do they have to daven? Where are these people going to daven Yom Kippur?
An owl shul.
Right. So Moshe here, the case was basically, if you read through Moshe's description, there was this guy, this rabbi, this rebbe, who had a shtibel or a shul of sorts, and he didn't get along with the Baal Batim. The Baal Batim said that he cursed them a few times, he screamed at them, they didn't like that he changed the Nusach HaTfilah, so they were fed up with him, and they wanted to go and daven somewhere else. So they broke away, and they started their own shul. Now, the legal claim is that by breaking away from the shul, they were cut. Like, he didn't have enough members to pay for his salary. So it was a sagas gvul claim. It was really a choshe mishpa claim. It's not a like a losis go to do claim. It's not like a ritual law question of like having multiple shuls in a community. It's really a claim about the legitimacy of cutting into his salary. The tshuva itself is very fascinating. It's worth reading, especially because parts of the claims are about the rabbi changing the service, changing the Nusach HaTfilah a little bit, changing the nigunim. So Moshe analyzes it, and he says, "Hanachom ani az daiti, shelo hayerushus lo lahem v'lo l'shum adam liyasid beis haknesses acher b'mokam asamach shal yidei zeh v'adei shehar v'meilu shehoyu holchem etzlo k'shelo him yastim beis haknesses acher yelchul beis haknesses acher sheyastu." You're pulling a lot of members away from the first shul. Why is that a problem? Because you're yored l'umanus chavero. You're cutting into the rabbi's livelihood. So he goes on to say, the af she'adai nisharu etzlo anashim shemespa'alim sham, even though the original rabbi has some congregants left, kivan she'huktan haminyan kokach ad she'ein lo kidei chayav, he says, since you're pulling people away, and now he cannot earn a salary, ad she'ein lo kidei chayav. What does kidei chayav mean? To support himself. Enough for his life, kidei chayav. That's considered kipuach ha-parnasa. He cites the Chassam Sofer that we read, that you're considered putting the rabbi out of business. And then he says, to force somebody to go less than they need, to earn less than they need for their livelihood, is like making them having no profits. Upasha, Shekedechayev mikri kedere chahutza la nashim benonim imadregasa v'chashivas. So here Moshe gives us a bit of a standard for what counts as pisuk legamri. What's his standard? Kedere chahutza la nashim benonim imadregasa v'chashivas. What does that mean? What's an average income for somebody of your socioeconomic level?
So once you dip below that average income?
That's like pisuk legamri. Remember, so over here we said, oh, the chiddush of the chassam sofer is that you could restrict somebody who's posig with chiyusei legamri. You cut off the guy's income altogether. Moshe is now saying, what is posig legamri? Pachas mikadei chayim.
That makes sense.
What is pachas mikadei chayim? It doesn't mean that your profits go to zero. It just means you can no longer support yourself. What's considered reasonable supporting yourself? So look at somebody of comparable socioeconomic level. Guys, look at Sam outside. Sam! Sorry, just getting a little in, not seeing my thing. Well, yellow jacket. Basically walks back in. Unfortunate that I just randomly decided to. That's what I saw.
It's pretty noticeable.
I thought it was like another sunrise today or something.
That's not something you see in college every day.
Right. Unfortunate for him that I decided to stand up that second. So Moshe says that Pashim Mikdechayev means less than someone of your socioeconomic status would be earning. So you figure out, oh, this is a rabbi in whatever community, you should be earning, I don't know, $100,000, under $50,000, $80,000, whatever it is. Right? To look at like a comparable normal earning. Oh, Sam, how are you?
Sorry.
That
saw me outside?
Well?
Saw me from...
Yeah.
Sorry.
Who do you think I was waving to? Alright.
How's the breakaway shoe? I don't get it.
Well?
How could there be a breakaway shoe if it's going to cause a guy to lose his job? How could there ever be a breakaway shoe if it will cause a rabbi?
Sir Moshe seems to say that taka would be, you can't. If it's going to cause the first rabbi, that's what he paskins over here.
Yeah, but that shoe is so much talking and you need a new shoe for different crowd to change it up.
So Rav Schechter supposedly doesn't like this shoe for Moshe. Whenever he quotes it, he has, he says, it doesn't make any sense, because remember we just learned in the Shulchan Aruch that if you have a better product, right, then that's a reason to compete.
Yeah.
So, why?
Well, is that
like,
not
here they didn't like the product that rabbi was offering. They didn't like that he screamed at them. They didn't like his Noskat Fila. So it doesn't that legitimize their breaking away? There shouldn't be a Sagak Svulim to say the Dulukukos.
Right.
Isn't that the fifth issue?
There's a question of if they should support the shul or not, no?
Let's just focus on the Chush and Mishwa question here for a second. I think, Rav Shach, there's another reason to be objecting to this. Tshuva Ramosha. So let me give you, for example...
Isn't the Chiddush...
One second. This question by Malamdim. So look at... Yeah. Look at page 16. The Gemara Babasra Chafalaf Mabez. The Gemara says that by Mikre Dardiki Lo Matzim Akev, Damar Mar, Kinasofrim Tarbe Chachma. So there's a.
Are you highlighting?
I'm highlighting, yeah. Do you see it or not? On page 16, my 16.
So the 17 for us.
The Gemara says that you can't restrict teachers from coming, because kinaso from tar b'chachma, it's almost like say to the lakuchos over here, meaning it's always better for society for there to be, if you have one rabbi in town, that's actually really bad for a community. You want multiple institutions to create that competitive energy, right? Each institution, each rabbi is going to try to be smarter and at least as competitive, as good as the other rabbi. So here, by the way, you can see the Gemara itself recognizes the positive benefits of competition. Kinasov from Tarva Chachma itself is a recognition of that. So I think Rav Schechter asks on this from this perspective, which is, shouldn't rabbis fall under this Mikre Dardiki idea that Kinasov from Tarva Chachma? So there shouldn't, you shouldn't be allowed to block competition for the rabbinate because it falls under this exception over here. Mikri Dartki lo matzi ma'akev. Correct? I think Rav Shetler has that objection to this tshuva of Moshe. Let me also further that. Here you have in the next source, tshuva of the Truma Sadeshen in Simen Kuf Chav Ches, where he was asked about a Talmud Chacham who wanted to stop another Talmud Chacham from coming to town because he said, I make all this money by officiating at weddings and by doing bris milas, and I don't want to have to share that livelihood with like a new rabbi who's coming in and now taking away those gigs. So the Shimon Sadeshan was asked about this, and he says, "Ein koach biyad hamachacham zeh limchos bechavero sheyikva dirasu etzlo v'lakachas toras cheverir." Says you can't stop another hamachacham from coming in and taking this status. He says, and if you'll complain.
What was he asked about?
He was asked about whether you could stop another scholar from moving into town because it could take away your business.
That was a question from before, right?
Yeah, similar question. Okay. He says, "Imi shum deyesh parnasa." If you're worried about losing your parnasa,
But that should be lack of itahu.
One second. Machmas hapras shetipo lekis hamanhigin megitin v'chalitza v'ashbas nashim v'schar birchas eres v'nisim v'chiyai gavna. If you're worried about losing out the schar, the financial payments that you were getting for doing all these services for the community, kama tatsdiki, kama tachbulos, al kibul pras zeh anu boshim ubitorach limtzor heter leruban, v'heich nachzir oso kuli hai lachshivo parnaso michia, levilti yasig acher behem. What are you saying?
You're not allowed to take money from these jobs.
Yeah. Exactly. Remember we saw that Talmud Torah is supposed to be for free. Teaching is supposed to mani b'chinam afatem b'chinam in principle. So Shimon Sadeshan says, a chutzpah, Rabbi, you're claiming a sagas mul that this new shul is going to cut into your income. You're not even supposed to be collecting money for your services. And the only way we're able to collect for those services is kind of this trick. Or a schar batala, whatever, we have to go through all these hoops to try to justify it. But it doesn't rise to the level of being earned income such that you could say you have a right to it, such that you're allowed to complain about somebody else cutting into it.
Is his stock different? Like, you want, like, this is his city, and, like, now it's got, like, rabbi's going to take away his...
His chashivas.
Or his rules. If he gives, he said his coach will not usher in his brother.
That's the first part of the tshuva. You can see that first part of the tshuva is about that.
Well, if he's a Talmud Chacham, isn't it just the lack of Talmud? Like, he's already Talmud Chacham, now they're Talmud Chacham, and he's just believe, you know what, like, if I, like, I, Hashem would provide for me another way.
You shouldn't be so small-minded, you're saying. I like what you're saying. It's not true for everyone in the world, though. But these are, you see the two objections to Moshe's tshuva. Objection number one is that maybe the new shul, if they don't like the product of the old shul, that should be a good reason for breaking away. That's like the Pesedel Lekuchos theory. The second problem with Moshe's tshuva is it's not clear that there's a claim of Asagas Gvul when it comes to the rabbinate. Correct? Based on the Tshuva Sadeshan and the Gemara and Bava Basra about Mikrei Dardiki. So Rav Shechter has this kind of wild theory where he says, oh, Rav Moshe was just, he like knew this breakaway shul and he knew these guys were up to no good. They weren't actually trying to like hire a rabbi or something. They were just up to mischief. So Rav Moshe had paskin against them, but he wasn't actually like, the din that he was relying on didn't actually apply so well to the case at hand. That's Rav Shechter's view about this. Yeah.
I thought the chiddush of the Chasam Sofer was that even if the product's different, but there's basically gamre, then you can't.
That's a great point, Ariel. I think that's a really great point. That's my own view. I think Rav Shechter's objection about Seda Lulakut, idea that it's differentiated, is not a good objection for a Moshe, because the theory about the better price or the better quality, that's only about location. That's when it's Hasagas mostly based off location. Somebody from out of town trying to come into town. In the Gemara itself, it's never applied, or at least we don't know whether it applies to a case of posek l'chiyuse. You might say, if you're putting somebody out of business altogether, then we don't care about the harm to the community. Because there, it's like a really strong right that this guy has that we want to protect, even if it comes at a bit of a financial loss to the community.
Right.
So it's really an open halachic question whether the exception of Seda Lulukuchos, which Shulchan Aruch had, that will allow competition if there's better product, cheaper prices, etc., whether that applies to a case where you're restricting competition on the basis of putting somebody out of business altogether. As opposed to a case where you're merely cutting into somebody's profits and we're restricting based off this idea that you're an out-of-towner, not an in-towner. So that's a great point. And I think it's actually implicit in Ramosha that he, as you said, I mean, Ramosha thinks that we don't care about the Seda de la Kuklos argument in the case of Posek Lichiyuse. Because that's exactly why he doesn't consider it in this. He doesn't care that the new minion is going to be fancier, better, you know, better built, better, a better product. Great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can't you argue that the congregants were the in-towners, so to speak, the locals, and then that the rabbi that they hired was the outsider and they brought him in?
Well, they didn't hire a new rabbi for the...
No, I'm saying the first rabbi.
The first guy. Oh, it's interesting. I guess at this point, though, he's already there, I think. He's already settled in the neighborhood. You know, we don't know where he came from. This also sounds like it was more of like a shtiebel type operation where
they were all there already.
Yeah, but I like what you're thinking. Okay, let me mention a third thing in halacha, a third principle of restricting competition. And that you have here on page 11, the idea of marufia. 11 in my pagination.
Paginations?
Yeah, page numbering.
Oh, 12. Yeah, 12 letters. It was like the first time you said it, and I was confused.
Sorry.
But now it's all good.
The source for this principle comes from Gemara Babasar Chafaf Mabez. The Gemara talks about Marchik and Metzudas Hadag, Meradag, Kimlo Ritzas Hadag. That when you have fishing nets, you have a duty to keep your fishing net far away from somebody else's net. And the Gemara says, why? Because of Shiny Dagim de Yavu Siyara. The idea is that if there's a fish that is enticed by somebody else's bait, it would be wrong for you to interpose and snatch the fish that's headed over to somebody else's trap. That's the scenario.
You're pretty much stealing their fish.
Well,
that's like just
so Rashi says it's like stealing. Well,
that's like the
he says, but it's not actually stealing because it didn't arrive in his trap yet. If it was already in his trap and he caught it, that would be gzeila mamish. The chiddush of this case is that it's wrong because it's on its way to his trap and you're like interposing. So in like I think you would translate this into like American terms or Western law terms. It's like you're interfering with prospective economic advantage. It's not like the guy owns something yet, but you're interfering with something that he's expected to have. And maybe it's an interesting shaila whether that itself is a tort. Is that itself a wrongdoing? The Gemara here says that you have a duty not to interpose. Like, even though he doesn't own it yet. But the fish that's on its way to his trap, you should let it get to his trap.
It's that, no?
Well, that's be a third category. It could be related to that.
Saying is that not the same exact
thing? It's interesting. Remember, that's only posek l'chiyusei, the way that Rishonim understood it.
Right, no.
There's a different theory.
Yes, a different theory, but it's very similar. Like, just visually, it's similar.
So when you get to the Mordechai that we have here in Tavkuf, Tesvav, and Babasra, he calls this Marufia. This is the principle of Marufia. What is Marufia? So the Rishonim use this phrase.
Word.
Well, yeah, one word. You can see it in the Mordechai.
Oh,
Marufia is a phrase that the Rishonim used to characterize like a money manager. So let's say you had this like billionaire or this millionaire or this wealthy person, and he would have like a Jewish money manager who would do his accounting, he would do his taxes, he would do his investments. And the reason why it's called a marufia, some Rishonim say, it's because like yaruf, yar futal, just like the dew is like so frequent, comes every morning, it's expected. So too, this guy has like an ongoing relationship with a Jewish, or with a money manager. So they say it would be wrong for you to go and try to pry away that relationship. So let's say, you have an accountant that you do your taxes with every year. So the theory here is that it would be wrong for me to go to your client and say, don't use Gabi this year. Do it with me. I'll give you 75% of the cost that Gabi charges you. That would be a violation of this idea. Why? Because it's expected income for Gavi. He has this relationship. He does the taxes every year for this guy. For me to go and solicit him and pry away that relationship, pry open that relationship, that would be like interposing where the in the case where the fish is swimming towards the net, towards the trap. This is all codified by the Rashba. Let's look at his tshuva.
What's the Mordechai say about the Rashba?
Yeah, the Mordechai just gives that case. He says, Yesh mekomo shedonin din ma'arufya. V'chein ra'isi v'tshuvas Rabbeinu Yosef Tuvelam. That's early Chachmei Tzarfas, around the time of Rashi, before Rashi. U'medame lo ledugim v'yohav yitzayda. It's analogous to the case of the fish that's on its way to the trap and somebody else is interceding. So too, if you have a established relationship with like a money and bet manager, or accountant, etc., it would be wrong for me to interpose and try to break open that relationship and insert myself there. Let me just give you the tshuvas of the Rishonim that discuss it. So turn to the tshuvas of Rashba. This tshuvas of Rashba gets discussed in the Shulchan Aruch. Chelek Vav, Simon Reish Nantes. So let's get this Sha'alta. Who wants to read it? Eli. Yeah. Want to read?
Sure.
Shalta.
Shalta. Ruben Shai. What's one? Ruben Shaya.
Chayit. What's a Chayit? Taylor.
What page are you?
15.
Ruben Shaya Chayit. Who revealed the Nei Iruni.
The Nei Iruni, yes. Ruben's a tailor, and this city man always comes to have his suits tailored at him. Mikama Shanin. Notice the fact pattern. This guy always comes to him for tailoring. He loves him. This guy doesn't give his tailoring to anybody else. So there's this kind of special relationship. It's not contractual, but it's an established relationship. So he pays $2 for every suit that's tailored. Now Shimon comes along. He's also a tailor. Shimon said, I'll do it for half price. Come to my tailor shop and I'll do it for $1. So Reuven's upset.
Reuven Bobby to aim on Shimon Shigarama
He says, oh, you stole from me by stealing my client. This is the shadow of poaching clients. Okay. So here's the shadow. Yorenu Rabbeinu, Yehava Kemazik Biadayim, Ograma Bin Ezekin. Like, what is this? Is the Bezin, could the Bezin force Shimon to give up the profits that he gained on this client poaching? So tshuva, here's what we're told. Tshuva, kol ki hai. Says Beis Din can't force Shimon to give up the money that he got because the non-Jew paid volitionally. The non-Jew made the decision who he was going to hire. Aval. But we should tell him that he did the wrong thing. So we're not going to force him to disgorge the gains, but we're going to object to what he did. And he says it's analogous to the fish snatching case, to the fisherman's case. And he says over here, V'hachanami, skip here, Kivan shiragil hulasos malachto al yidei zeh. Very interesting category, right? He didn't get it yet, but it's as if you're stealing his schar. So that's why it's not actual stealing, so you can't force him to give it back after the fact, but we could say it's the wrong thing. It's definitely the wrong thing to do, so it's prohibited, but it's not something that's legally enforceable to give back. Okay. See, the Shulchan Aruch paskins this. He says, "Afilu Yisrael she'osem malacha itzal v'kochavim v'ragid l'kach asher liYisrael acher likane sham lahozil hamalacha." It's prohibited for another Jew to interpose and insert himself there. V'emrotz elasos go'arimbo. We scoff at him if he tries to do this. Miu imavar v'asa imotim biyado. B'di'evet, we're not going to force him to give back the profits. So in the first two principles that we saw, stopping competition based off location, that's kind of enforceable by Jewish law. The second principle of posek l'chiyusei, if you're cutting out the guy's profits altogether, and that's enforceable by Jewish law. This third case of the Ma'arufia about interfering with someone's prospective economic gain, like when they have a client that they have a good, they have an ongoing relationship with, there the Shulchan Aruch says it's aser to try to poach a client, but after the fact, we're not going to force you to disgorge profits. Okay, but those are the three principles. Those are the three major areas of where the halakha thinks it's wrong to compete with somebody. Now, of course, on this last point, there's a distinction between poaching clients, and just advertising. It's a very subtle distinction. Of course, you're allowed to advertise, but it's different when you go and like say, "Oh, I know you've been working with so-and-so. I'll give you a better deal than so-and-so. Come work with me now." In that case that I mentioned with the jewelry store, the jewelry store, so the guy, the salesperson who was doing all the sales back in California, the salesperson.
Like the owner that went to
He went from California to New York.
Okay.
But the sales guy, when he decided that he wanted to go rogue, it's actually a crazy story. The owner of the store realized, kind of sensed that he was going to go rogue, that he was going to do something bad. So he's like, "Oh, I need you to give me back the company phone." So he's like, "Oh, I need the phone because like my kid is sick, and in case my kid calls, I need it. I'll give it to you tomorrow." So that night, he sends out a text to all the clients from the phone saying, "Great news, I'm opening my own shop. Come visit me at my new store over here. I'm no longer working for so-and-so."
But that's
clearly a case of, like, here he's poaching the clients. Abdi and the Torah is a very interesting question. Who owns those relationships, right? If you work for somebody else, but you made a lot of the relationships, who owns them?
Also, he's using the other guy's resources.
Right, he's using the company phone to do it.
Using the other guy's resources that he's hurting.
Yeah.
In order to...
It's even worse. Right, it's worse than the classic.
You could argue that it's his resources too.
We said Yad Poel, Yad Balabayas. If he made the... He wasn't an owner, just an employee. Just an employee, right. So we actually did in that case, is we said, yes, normally the halacha is not mechayev you to give back gains that you made from poaching clients. But here, since it was so egregious that he used like company property to poach, it's not just that he did what he did was wrong. It's like, this is like walking into somebody else's store and telling all the clients there to come to my store and cross the street, right? We thought it was more egregious. So what we did in that case is we were mechayev him to give back any profits he made from any customer on that initial text for like the first like 12 months. Because we said, well, no, it wasn't so much. It was like I was like $30,000 or something in the end. It's not so much, but a reasonable amount. As because it was a wrongful solicitation, it was definitely usher, and it was using company property, which was itself wrong. We did say that he has the right to compete. Meaning, we did say that when he opened up his separate store, he had the right to do that because he's a local in this neighborhood. But that doesn't justify his poaching the clients, like in this way of using the company property. Very interesting application, though. What?
A couple of dinners in the cap.
Right. All right, guys. Great. Shkoyach, everybody.